it's your host, Terry McDougall, and I'm so excited about our episode of Marketing Mambo today. Our guest, Jose Ucar, who is basically a citizen of the world. He was born in Venezuela, and from there, he made his way to Sweden, then on to Spain, and finally to the UK, where he lives today. And he has a practice where he helps people become better presenters, better storytellers, and he uses neuro-linguistic programming to help people do that. Before I jump into the episode today, I'd like to touch on something that we will be talking about today with Jose, and that is the fact that perception is reality. Very often, if you're having discomfort at work or you're not getting the results that you'd like to get, sometimes a mindset shift can help you experience things differently. And you can begin to show up differently in your role. And miraculously, the people around you will also show up differently because you've essentially changed the dynamic. So as an executive and leadership coach, I help people do just that. So if you're running into obstacles at work, if you're having discomfort, if you've got conflict with people around you, and you're trying to reach your goals and you keep running into the same obstacles again and again, please contact me for a free consultation. We may be able to shift your mindset so that the perception of what you're experiencing changes, and so your reality changes along with it, and you may be able to achieve your goals with less stress and duress and more enjoyment. So if that sounds attractive to you, reach out to me. So without further ado, let the Mambo begin. Welcome to Marketing Mambo with your host, Terry McDougall. It's the fun and fast podcast where we cha-cha chat with marketing movers and shakers from around the globe. Everybody, it's Terry with Marketing Mambo, and I am delighted today to be bringing you Jose Ucar, who is a global TEDx speaker, an NLP coach, international business marketing specialist, and founder of Finding Excellence. Jose and I met recently whenever I was a guest on his podcast, and so I asked him to return the favor and be a guest on mine. And Jose is a very interesting person I found in our previous conversation. He was born and raised in Venezuela and somehow found his way to the UK. And so, Jose, welcome.
Terry, thank you so much. And I am indeed returning the favor. It was a pleasure to have you on my podcast. And now it's my time to be here on Marketing Mambo. Woo!
Yeah. Well, I hope we'll chat a little bit today. So, I just was really interested in your story. I know that you have done a lot of different things in your career, and I would love it if you could just kind of give us the story of how you got started and what you're doing now. What took you to the UK from Venezuela?
Terry, would you like me to share just the positive things, or should I go into everything? Is the audience ready for this?
I think we're ready for this. Sometimes the most interesting parts are the parts that maybe we don't like to tell.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. By the way, I have to say, because I want to say that I love the Marketing Mambo name, and the Mambo somehow, in my mind, I link it to salsa, which is one of the, you know, I'm not a professional dancer or anything, but I do like to dance a bit of salsa. Even in the UK, that's one of the reasons why after many years, I found my partner, my wife, from Colombia in the UK. Anyway, linking Mambo, salsa, stories. Let's go back to Venezuela. I was recording another podcast this morning, another episode, and I was brought up in a very small town. Well, small town compared to what? I think at the moment it must have around 500,000 people by the sea. And at that point, I always knew I wanted to go out to travel, to see the world. And for some reason, I wanted to speak English. That was one of those things that I remember telling my mom. Not to say that I speak very well now. I've got my accent and everything else. But hey, you know, here I am podcasting, right? So When I finally turned 16, I was about to graduate from high school. I had the opportunity to go to Sweden as an exchange student. And that was, to me, the springboard, that trampoline that took me to, you know, new places, opened up my mind in a way that I finally kind of took in everything that's out there to learn and to absorb and to enjoy. And from that moment, Jose was never the same guy. I mean, I changed for the positive and I started taking on what I would like to say, like a super broad approach to the world. And I love people. I've always done, I mean, it's just one of my things. And the more multicultural the environment I'm in, the more I believe I thrive. And that's what, you know, made perfect sense. I came back from Sweden to Cumaná, is the name of the town. Then I moved back to Caracas, where I was born, the capital of the country. And then I couldn't stay there any longer. So I traveled, I studied international business and customs. So then that got me, well, to travel to Spain, because that's where my grandparents were. And then from Spain, I decided, look, I need to go to a multicultural place. What is the closest? And then I found London, and here I am enjoying it. Even during lockdown, Terry, look at the two of us. And I know I'm talking quite a lot, so feel free to interrupt and just go, Jose, stop. Because look at the two of us. I mean, you're over near Chicago, I know. And here I am in London, and we're having a lovely conversation. So, you know, there are no barriers. Just whatever we create in our minds.
Yes, absolutely. It's one of the things that I've actually appreciated about the lockdown is that I know that if I were doing what I used to do, which was getting out and seeing people, you know, face to face, I mean, I love that, of course, but because we're stuck at home, this has knocked down the barriers to us connecting with people all over the world, which is fascinating. And I love being able to bring different perspectives to people on the podcast. And I appreciate what you said about the marketing Mambo. The Mambo actually originated in Cuba. And it talked about multicultural. It really was Africans who were brought there in bondage, unfortunately. But, you know, it was part of the culture that they created with the music and everything that they brought with them from their homeland. And then Creek sort of evolved there in Cuba. And it's great music, you know, and great rhythms and all of that. So definitely sort of like cross-pollination of different cultures, which is cool, which is what I want to do with this podcast. So it's part of the reason why I picked the name.
Which is what we're doing at the moment, cross-pollinating. Yeah. And we are not doing any Mambo, but as I promised last time we spoke, I said I was going to travel to your area. We were going to go to the concerts and everything else. So
yes,
I'm hoping
yes,
to play some Mambo somewhere, at least some good jazz.
Yeah, they definitely have a lot of different types of music there. So I think that we could probably pick something that's pretty multicultural. But talk to me about, I know that you do a lot of presentation coaching. And before I hit record today, we were talking a little bit about the importance of storytelling in just about any aspect of life. But of course, we're here to talk about marketing. So I would love to get your perspective on what's so critical about storytelling in presentations and other things that you do in your coaching and how it relates to marketing?
I love it. I'm thinking this morning, it's very interesting how these things come about, because this morning I was writing about something similar. Because, you know, every time when I talk to people, I find many professionals that say to me, yeah, I know what you do, Jose, and I present a lot. And I do this all the time. And then I'm always curious, because what is that thing or one of the elements that make the difference between a great speaker and a leader, a person that inspires and motivates and drives and keep people engaged, and those who don't? And there are different elements, as I said, but to me, one of the most important ones is storytelling. And I would say not just for the public speaking side of things, but in life. I remember going back to when I was 4, 3, 5, and, you know, how my dad wasn't very good at it, I have to say, but my mom and my granddad, they were amazing at telling stories. And I would listen to them and they would just take me on a journey with them. And that was fascinating. So when people say, yeah, I do public speaking, I would like to be there and see how much of the storytelling they do, because there is a crucial difference here. I can go, Terry, and start speaking about different elements at the moment. I can give you loads of factual information. I can then speak, you know, give you some statistics. I can you name it. Overload your conscious mind, right? All the logical side of the brain, overload it, and then even before 5 minutes, you're wandering off, you're gone. Wow. Yeah, of course. The mind can only take so much. I work a lot with a communication model from the NLP, which is, I'm an NLP master trainer, and I like to explain to people, we can only, I know the mind is powerful, and yet we can only take certain amount of information in a given time. So if we overload it, and it's about, some people say 3 to 4 chunks of information, some others take it up to 10. Well, again, between 1 and 10, what are we talking about? So if I give you way too much, I'm losing you. I'm losing my audience.
Yeah.
And then that connection is not taking place. And if we look at the neuroscience side of things, there is a lovely image, and I'm happy to share it with you later as well, in which, you know, when we're sharing factual information, the brain, it's illuminated in 2 areas only, as opposed to when we tell a story. When we tell a story, we have like 5, 6, or 7 areas of the brain. So we are creating that connection, that deeper connection with the audience. At the same time, we are enabling that people listening to us, they take their own learnings in their own way. So we don't have to put information onto them like we do when we share factual stuff.
Yeah,
so that is a skill. And if we take it to the marketing side of things, which is, again, what, you know, what I'm sharing can be applied to anything in life. But then with the marketing angle, in many occasions, people go presenting and then they just go boom and just give you, even on a sales presentation, all the different features, all of the different benefits, and they just give you a list of lots of information. And how different would it be if they actually share something they've achieved with their product, with their brand, with their business, as a story with a real client? And you can tell it quicker, differently, enjoy it. People connect with that. They can even see in their own mind how it could apply to them. So that is the beauty of storytelling.
Yes.
And it's not, it's ingrained in ourselves, in our DNA, much more than actually spitting features and facts and statistics and that PowerPoint presentation with thousands of words overloaded. Let's overload everybody. Let's get bored. Yeah, I do public speaking.
Yeah, that's so funny. Yes, because really when people say public speaking, that just means that they're in front of 2 or more people talking.
And with a PowerPoint.
Are they effective public speakers? A couple things. NLP, that's neuro-linguistic programming, correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay, good. I just wanted to spell that out for folks that maybe haven't heard of that. There were so many things that you were talking about that just, you know, got my brain lighting up in many different areas. I think the first thing was when you were saying that your mom and your grandfather told good stories, right? And they took you along on these journeys. And I think that what you're talking about is really meeting people where they are and relating to them in a way that feels relevant to them so that they want to go along on that journey with whoever is telling the story. And not, I think that when people stand up and throw a lot of facts and figures and so forth at people, they're failing to connect in that way so that people really want to go along on the journey with them. And let's see, what else do I want to say about that? Oh gosh, I don't know.
it's okay. I mean, when we usually reach that point in which we don't know, then we've shared what we were supposed to at that point. And can I compliment? Because this is
a bit of
a complaint to many businesses out there. I attended a conference, of course, before lockdown. It was a big conference around HR and benefits for employees and things like that. And I joined a couple of talks. And one of them I was quite curious about because this gentleman was in charge for the communications, worldwide communications, super director, blah, blah, blah. I always get lost with these titles anyway. So I thought, wow, I mean, an opportunity to learn. I sat down, 3 minutes in, I was gone because I like to measure how engaged I am and what is it that I'm finding about the person speaking. And again, yeah, that's what I do and what I love. And I realized, I mean, the gentleman stood up. He put on his PowerPoint and he started pretty much reciting what was on the PowerPoint. Mm. And the PowerPoint in a very small screen, another, you know, big error, you cannot even see, and then full of words.
Yeah.
And then I'm just thinking, okay, and I'm going to be a bit opinionated here. How dare you? I mean, you're taking people's times, right? And In the end, you know, you're creating all the wrong impressions. And the thing is, you know, sometimes we don't know what a good presenter is like. That's another thing. We don't know what a good presentation may look like. I mean, we don't know, generalizing. So sometimes we see there, oh yeah, another PowerPoint presentation. Are we supposed to be bored for an hour? Because that's how we, in a way, the industry has educated us. Let's change that. I mean, thank God TED Talks are out there because they show a different angle to public speaking. And we can incorporate that to our lives, to our businesses, everything. No wonder they used to call me Fluffy. Fluffy Jose. Yeah, come on, let's bring some sparks into it. Let's get people entertained.
Well, isn't that funny? I think that you're absolutely right about how we've been sort of brainwashed into thinking that presentations have to be boring and they have to have the PowerPoint, because when we've seen good speakers, we might even consider it like that really wasn't a presentation. That was, you know, entertainment, right? And you feel very differently when somebody entertains you, and that's very likely going to stick with you a lot longer. You're going to remember it. You're going to remember those stories. And I think that I remembered what I was going to say earlier, which is that we make decisions based on emotion and we rationalize them based on facts. And I think that we think that we make decisions rationally, but in fact, those decisions are made much more deeply. And I think that stories allow us to really connect and relate to what's going on. And that way it sort of weaves itself. And I'm not a neuroscientist by any stretch of the imagination, but this is something that I've learned personally, but also in all my years of marketing. And how do you influence people, right? You do have to get them to go on the journey with you. You do have to get them to know that you understand their issue and that you understand it to the point that you're inviting them on a journey that's going to be helpful and relevant to them. And when you're telling stories, they can really imagine themselves walking that path. And they're going to remember it too.
Of course. And as I like to say, Terry, facts tell and stories sell.
Yes. Yes.
That is, you know, very simply put, that's what happens. And you keep on going on about, you know, the taking people on that journey with you and starting where they are. And then I usually say when you do public speaking, present, communicate, want to positively influence others, there's two things you can do. You're either there for you or you're there for them.
Yeah.
Or it can be a third one, you for both, you know, for both parties. But I like to say, look, every time I'm exposing myself and being vulnerable, I'm there. It's because I want to positively influence others. And then that changes everything because my interaction is not about me. It's not about sharing my PowerPoint. It's not about performing. It's about them taking something away. And I like to say every time I present, they will take not necessarily what they want, but what they need. And that's how I run my coaching sessions as well. I work with what's in there at the moment, in the present. And telling a story is an amazing way to do just that.
That is really a great point. I had a podcast episode a couple of weeks ago with somebody, and he was actually a sales trainer. And we were just talking about an experience that I had when I was a marketing director. And I think it was an advertising salesperson came in, and he came in to see me. And actually, he brought his sales manager along also, which I didn't know that person was going to be there. But they came into my office and came in with like this 3-inch binder. And I sat down to start talking with them. And he just flips the binder open as if he's going to take me through all of their latest statistics about their publication and why I should advertise in it. And I just stopped him right there because, quite frankly, he had not earned the right to do that with me yet, right? I mean, he didn't understand. He never asked me any questions about what challenges I was facing, whether I wanted to look at the binder. You know, he really hadn't earned that right. And I think that, you know, a lot of what you're talking about is, you know, when somebody comes in and they flip on the PowerPoint and they just start like forcing you, you know, to go through all of the statistics that they find fascinating. The reason why people don't find that very interesting is because they haven't demonstrated that they understand the issue that somebody's facing. And I think that when you tell stories, it builds trust. It shows that the person empathizes. right? And to the point that you're making about, am I there for me or am I here for you or is it for both? You know, in the case of the guy with the binder, he was there for him. You know, I think that maybe it was like even to demonstrate to the sales manager, like, this is how I handle things. And had he really been there for me, he would have been a lot more curious about what I was facing. You know, and I think that in sales, obviously, you want to be there for both. It's a win-win type thing. If you understand that person and you've gotten the permission to talk to them about the thing that you're selling, I think that it's really based on the fact that you want to demonstrate you understand their needs and then give them a solution to what that might be.
And you said something that is very powerful, which is earning that right, you know, to show me the binder. And that even it's quite metaphorically, because one thing, I mean, when people come asking me things, and also in our language, we use a lot of presuppositions. We presuppose things in the way in which we talk and with leading questions and without even noticing. And I become a radar for spotting these things, especially during coaching sessions, because then I couldn't be, you know, calling them out if we're having just a regular conversation. Can you imagine? Hey, Terry, there we go. You're presupposing something. You haven't earned the right to do just that. That's why what I found when I focus on the other person, you mentioned curiosity, I get so curious that then naturally the connection is there and I begin to, you know, gain information that, you know, I may need for my sales process or to positively influence the person or just to connect, you know, just having a conversation, networking or anything is similar. I mean, what we do here, if it was just a matter of, okay, who's right and who's wrong, then we wouldn't be having this conversation in the way we're having it now, would we?
No, it's so true. Well, so, you know, I'd like to hear a little bit more about, I probably know enough about NLP to be dangerous. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about NLP and what it's all about.
Yeah, you said you could be dangerous with NLP. So now you got me curious, Terry. What do you know that I don't?
Well, I know enough to be dangerous is what I'd say. I think I'm probably about halfway through a course on NLP on Udemy.com. Okay. I'll let you explain what it is.
Well, what I'm going to do is give you my version, okay? Because, as you well said, NLP, you were referring to neuro-linguistic programming. And in many occasions, when I say it, people go like, oh, yeah, thanks. Is that an insult or is that, what is it really?
Right.
And then I like to break it down. And I think I touched on some of the elements. So the neuro, which is the mind, how do we create our reality in a nutshell? How do we react, interact with the world? Okay. Then we have the linguistic, which is then the language, how we then transform all of this in our mind and then communicate, which is the language, is the body language, is the verbal communication as well. And all of the different elements, the presuppositions I touched on. And, you know, our language speaks, you know, our world, put it that way. Mm-hmm. And then the programming is then how do we then go about, you know, the way in which we're creating our reality, interacting, creating that subjective experience. How can we change it? How can we tweak it? How can we add things to it in a way that then we change things for the positive, for the better, we improve. So another definition for NLP is the study of the structure of the subjective experience, which is what I just explained. So I'm perceiving this scenario like this, and that is not necessarily what reality is. It is very subjective. So how can I change that? What is my strategy? So within NLP, the patterns of thinking, sequences of thoughts are called strategies. And that is where I tend to focus most of my coaching and my daily life. So to me, NLP is much more than a set of techniques that you learn that are there and are very helpful. And at the same time, you know, I'm taking all of that plus my daily life and then, you know, playing around with that. So you turn life into an ongoing learning opportunity, learning journey, in which you're always, you know, acquiring new things, learning from every interaction with another human being, knowing how you're feeling and then being able to change it. It's amazing. To me, it's a way of life and it's also kind of a philosophy as well. So NLP to me is quite a big thing. So I would invite people, if you're doing that course, Terry, yeah, I encourage you to do more. And if you want to find out even more, talk to me. I would also, on this note, I would like to highlight, well, I'll share the name of Sue Knight. She's an amazing NLP master trainer whom I've learned a lot from. So yeah, we could speak about NLP for maybe a couple of days if you like.
I can tell that you have a passion for it, and certainly as you're talking about it, I recognize a lot of things that I learned in my coach training too. And I think at the heart of it, what we're talking about here is, you know, that perception, your perception of the world, like you were saying, the subjective experience, that perception is reality. And if we can change the way that we perceive things, the way that we talk about things, the way that we think about things, that we can actually change the way that we experience our world. Would you say that that's sort of aligned with what NLP is about?
Yeah, absolutely. And then modeling, which is, you know, how NLP was created by Richard Bandler and John Grinder. They started modeling, looking at how people did things. So they modeled Virginia Satir, Milton Erickson for the vague language, for example, or Milton language, as they call hypnotic, and many more. So by then you're learning the process of modeling, then say you're doing something with extreme excellence theory, which might be, for example, writing a book. So I can actually really look into the sequences of thoughts that you follow in order to achieve that outcome. And then the next thing I do, once I sort of break it down by having a conversation with you, I can learn it, I can adapt it, which, you know, makes it flexible and adapted to you, and then you can go apply it or teach it. So think about it. If we see somebody that is successful at running a business, somebody that's successful at public speaking, podcasting, taking the dog out for a walk, being whatever it is, it can be tiny, you know, how you drink water on a daily basis, what's triggering all of that? Anything, how you brush your teeth. Excellence is out there available for you. And you tell me if that is not powerful.
It's very, very powerful. And it's really a lot of what you're talking about to me is really at the heart of what coaching is about. And I know that you coach people in some ways. I think that what you do is a little bit meta, right? Because you're teaching, you're using coaching to help people achieve this excellence, but you're also using the NLP and probably teaching that as well to help people do that with others. So it's sort of contagious in a way, right? That you, when you model this, that other people learn to do it and then they can be more influential in what they're doing. And I think that also, you know, just going back to what we were saying towards the beginning of the conversation about storytelling, another thing that you're talking about is, like, you know, influencing people to have these habits that when they can sort of absorb the model in a way, and then they can weave that in with their own way of being, it becomes so much more powerful than if somebody tries to just come in and impose a way of being on them, because they never really sort of absorb it into their own experience. And, you know, I think that if you look back at the way that 100 years ago that children were taught, that they were taught more with, like, the rote memorization of facts and that sort of thing versus, you know, maybe a little bit more experiential learning. When you do experience something, whether it's physically or mentally, because I think that in storytelling, you are experiencing something, right? It might be in your imagination, but you're imagining yourself, you know, doing whatever that person is doing, or you're relating. You're like, oh my gosh, yes, that's similar to an experience that I've had. And that just sticks. I'm no, you know, neuroscientist, but I think that that probably weaves itself into the memory much more than sort of like the, you know, just functional part of the brain that just deals with more routine things. I sound official and scientific.
Wow. Yeah, at the end you were starting to lose me, so I'm not sure about the last bit. Everything else, I agree. Lovely summary as well, Terry.
Yeah.
I mean, I like to say that, you know, we live, and again, this is another generalization, in a society of imposing. Another NLP term is the map of the world, which is, you know, our perception of things, put it that way. And then we impose our reality onto others. And we tend to do that a lot. So no wonder when we're teaching and then people teach and they teach you their way, instead of enabling the person to find their own way. It's not to say that you're not going to share your elements, the elements of, you know, the things you know, your insights and everything else, but it's a different dynamic. It's the experiential learning that you referred to. And I don't remember anybody teaching me how to walk, to be honest. I just remember one day, I stood up and I started walking. And I walk in a similar fashion, and I speak about this on my TED, I walk in a similar fashion to my dad. Mm-hmm. Why would that be? Because he was the person I was looking up to when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then I do certain things like my mom, because that's how we do things. The beauty of a story is that we generate a similar level of connection as we do when we are making eye contact. Why do babies look at you like, wow, they are amazed with those big eyes? When that happens, our brain activities are getting closer to each other. And that is powerful. And we can still do that. That is who we are. Yes. And then, you know, if somebody imposes something, then what I do is, okay, let me see Mr. or Mrs. I'll take this. I'll find that useful. I incorporate it to my repertoire. Everything else, thank you. Because I know now how it works. But if you don't, then, you know, people keep on throwing stuff at you.
Yeah, exactly. I know that in my coaching, I actually work with people a lot on creating and maintaining boundaries, because I think a lot of times it's very stressful and even depressing when people don't have boundaries and they feel like they're, you know, the walls are closing in because there's so much that's expected of them by other people, and they don't recognize that they have the ability to do what you just said, which is, okay, you know, I have a boundary and I'm going to see what you're trying to communicate to me. And I'm going to choose the things that I allow in. And I'm going to, you know, have a firm enough boundary that I keep the things out. And, you know, and I think that what's really critical here too is that I believe it's really about respect for the individual, right? And realizing Absolutely. That each of us have value. And that if we're willing to come together as separate individuals and recognize that there can be sort of like this interchange of ideas, and that there's going to be better things that happen if we don't try to impose, if we share respectfully the information that we have, and we do it only with people that have given us permission to do it, right? Like that we're not trying to come in and
impose. Don't show me the binder.
Yes,
I don't want to look at your binder.
Unless I'm asking, you know, like, and that was the funny thing. I mean, I still remember it was a green binder. I totally remember. I knew exactly where they were sitting. And I looked at that thing and it was like 3 inches thick. And I thought, oh my gosh, I do not want to have to be held hostage while you walk me through 300 pages in that binder. But that was definitely an attempt to impose, for sure. Well, so let's connect the dots between all of the stuff that we've talked about here and what it takes to be effective from a marketing standpoint.
Okay. Next time, Terry, I won't talk too much, so I can actually summarize it quicker if you like. So in terms of the marketing, think about it. We started with the whole storytelling. So if we start from the mere fact that facts tell and stories sell, there you go. You have a huge indicator in there that, you know, it is good to start sharing stories. And not just stories. I'm not saying if you're going to be speaking to a person, you go with a long story or anything, but you have anecdotes, you have metaphors. The binder, for instance, is a lovely metaphor to, you know, illustrate any point. So begin to think as you communicate, as you're getting your message out there, then begin to do it in a similar fashion. Incorporate your anecdotes, incorporate metaphors. Connect with the audience and make sure, you know, you're taking them on a journey with whatever it is that you're sharing, whatever your marketing message is. And then, well, if we've spoken about NLP, the whole language of persuasion is always going to be there. And I guess, you know, we may need to, you know, a bit more of time to expand on those elements, but then think that the way in which you say something is going to have an impact. And thinking ahead of what kind of impact you would like to have is going to be helpful in terms of you creating that message. How do you want to influence others? How do you want to position yourself? And every time you're sharing something, even me here, you're swearing what I'm wearing and speaking in the way I'm speaking, I'm positioning myself in the minds of my audience, in the mind of the people, my potential customers or current customers. And that is super important, just being congruent with who you are and the message you convey, and being mindful that if you gesture in a specific way, if you speak in a specific way, you're creating an impression. I think, you know, that's how I would like to summarize it in terms of marketing, the marketing message that we share. I'm sure there is much more we can do around this, but, you know, for people selling, begin to focus more on the other person. Begin to focus right. on the things you can do for others, and not, don't make it a mission. Don't go with a binder. Do the opposite. Be for the other person.
Yeah, yeah. I think what we're talking about here is building that trust. And one of the other things that I was thinking about as we were talking earlier is that it's so much more powerful if you can build followership rather than try to coerce someone to go on a journey with you, because there can be a level of resistance. And I don't think people are receptive to receiving messages if they feel like there's coercion involved, versus, you know, if they feel like they can trust the person, that they can relate to the person that's telling the story or marketing or selling, whatever that communication is, that they're going along willingly and they're just more receptive to the message. And I think that's really, it's really critical. So I have another quick question for you before we close is, what kind of cultural differences have you seen between Venezuela and the UK in terms of the type of work that you do?
Well, I like to answer what comes to mind. And I don't think I've ever paid personally too much attention to differences, but actually similarities. That's always been, in a way, my approach, because everywhere I go, every time I look for the similarities, things that, you know, we do in a similar fashion, or, you know, like attracts like. So I've always found amazing people everywhere I've been.
Yeah.
So if I say something at the moment, for example, about the Russians, that people say they're too serious, they're too this, they're too that. I spent a couple of weeks in Russia working during one of my travels, and the people I met in Russia, they were amazing. They took me to amazing places. I mean, the whole stereotype didn't even exist. So, but when I went there with an open mind and actually looking for things that we have in common, basically. So the same thing when I've been to India, when I've been to Australia, when I've been to Thailand, when I've been to the States, when I've been to Mexico. And then that makes it, you know, you can't get along with anybody. You can build instant rapport. And you mention this, Terry, when you respect others. Mm-hmm. So that's the main foundation for me, respecting. And then that leads to acceptance and, in a way, appreciation for the things, yeah. you know, how they do stuff. So you can connect to anybody. There are no limitations, but, you know, how you perceive things.
I love that perspective. And I think that, again, it does go back to that respect and the recognition also that we're all individuals. We might have been brought up in a particular culture, but there's a wide variety of perspectives even within a particular culture. And I really love that idea of approaching people to say, like, what do we have in common? Where can we connect? I've always said in marketing that I want to meet my prospect where they are. I'm not going to like stand up in the ivory tower and shout down to them. I want to go meet them where they are and see things from their perspective and hopefully request that they come along on a journey with me, you know, towards wherever the places that they want to go. And if I'm trying to market or sell or influence, that, you know, I'm doing it with integrity, right? That I'm doing it because I believe that they're going to benefit from the conversation or the journey that I'm taking them on.
Yeah. Terry, I just had, as you were sharing this, something came to mind. Can I share quickly? This is going to be
Absolutely.
A short story.
Yeah.
In the end, I started working, well, before I started with my coaching business, I was working for an American company that then turned Japanese. So was acquired by a bigger corporation. So as I traveled to different trade shows, I met Japanese people from different businesses as well. And I remember, you know, the difference that makes the difference and how you connect differently. I went to their stand and to one of these Japanese businesses, because I wasn't like a high level executive. I was just the marketing manager for Europe. Because I visited their stand, they gave me a pair of socks as a sign of appreciation. Okay. So they go with a pair of socks. I didn't really know what that meant at that point. That was a connection with that business. I went to another one in which they had a Japanese gentleman that was very used to interacting with people worldwide. And when they saw they were going to give me again another pair of socks, he just took them away and he gave me a bottle of wine, followed by a lovely conversation. So you see, it's just sometimes being open, being flexible with the approach, noticing, being curious, instead of just being a robot, automated. It's just, okay, yeah, you get socks, which, you know, whatever that might mean for that person, if you're looking for a connection. So I guess, you know, I wanted to share that. And that is, you know, a story for the audience, your audience, to take whatever they want to take away from it.
So just stay aware, right? And respond, not just like, hey, this is what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to give socks.
I'm going to give you socks and a binder. There you go, Terry, next time we talk.
Right, exactly. No thanks to the binder. So, Jose, I'd like to give you an opportunity to tell us about, you know, who you work with and where people can find you.
Ooh, thank you, Terry. I'm having so much fun here. That time is flying. So yeah, we reached that point now. Well, I like to say that I work with everybody. I love to work with executives, managers, people that are managing people, right? So that's one of my focuses. And also individuals that would like to promote their business, take their business to another level, because then the marketing skills that I have as a consultant and also the public speaking have positively impacted my business and many businesses out there. So really, people wanting to improve their lives, in a nutshell, anybody that wants to succeed through the power of advanced communication skills. And people can find me on, if you type my name on Google, Jose Ucar, you will find plenty of information around me. And also www.finding-excellence.com. That is my website. And you also have the opportunity to book a virtual coffee with me, because that's one of the things I love, coffee, a chat, and business.
Awesome. Well, Jose, it's been so great talking with you again. And I really appreciate having you on Marketing Mambo.
Thank you so much, Terry. I really enjoyed it. Marketing Mambo. Woo.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Marketing Mambo. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe, like, and share. I'd love to hear from you. Check out the show notes for my social media and contact information. Until next time, adios.